Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
This is part two with Lucas Jaden on how to get through those dungeon moments.
What if you see an athlete say, before a match, and you can tell they're heading south towards the dungeon, and they're emotionally worked up. Is that a too sensitive a moment to approach them? I'm sure some of it is getting to know your athlete, but what have you found? Do you need to give it some space first, or do you get right in there when they're?
Did you say before or after?
Before a match, you're in the warm up and things aren't going right, and you're seeing them not act like themselves, and you want to help them get ready for the match, but they're clearly not in a state to have a conversation.
Yeah, and so it's twofold. If you're going to look at long-term impact of like helping them grow, and like, hey, we need to process this, definitely not the right time. You might have a lizard come out on you at that moment of somebody snap or break down and cry if that's how they roll in those situations. But you still have an event to play. And so one of the questions that always interests me, like, is when coaches before matches, like, they don't know what to say to their kids, even when they're not in a dungeon mode. So it's kind of that nervous energy, and we suck at stillness. And so we fill that stillness up with empty praise. We fill it up with weird stuff that is just kind of filling our nerves. And so one of the questions I ask kids or athletes is, how are you feeling? And what's interesting is what we're training them to say, no, is more than likely they're not feeling great, right? And so whether it's nervous, whether it's fearful, but what we're training them to use is their feelings as a compass. So don't ignore this. But when I'm in that state, what I can't do is trust usually whatever BS is going through my head. And so our feelings almost direct us to which of those thoughts are most truthful to the person I want to be. And so, if I went up to that type of kid, depending on the relationship, obviously, might ask, hey, how are you feeling? And it might be, I don't know. It could be, I can't get focused. I'm all over the place. All my words would be in that moment is, all right, hey, sounds like your lizard is active. Sounds like you're in the dungeon. Trust your training. And it's obviously comes out in different ways to different kids. But that to me is kind of where the freedom comes in of trust your training. These feelings that you have right now are your compass to the bogus that's in your head isn't what should hold you back. You're way beyond that. And so to kind of wrap up your question, it's for long-term growth, I like those conversations when they're at a higher state, just a little bit more clarity involved. But when an event is coming up, making that type of connection is what I've seen work.
And what do you think about involving like leaders or teammates? Would they have more success instead of a coach? How can they help in these situations?
Yeah, I really look at it depends on your kids, and hopefully the best teams that I've been able to work with are player-led teams. And so they are experts in exactly what that kid is struggling with or athlete is struggling with at the time. And so it could be, especially working in the female world, I'll be the first one to say, like, I've coached females for the last 7 years, and I'll be the first one to say I have no idea what some of the challenges are that you have to be able to work through. But I do know who does, and it's your teammates. And so really helping to equip them to be able to approach them. And a lot of the times when we know their dungeon is about where do I fit, about getting into that, the status of the group. And so if one of the teammates can step up and become an anchor point. And so it's just a kind of a term that we use in the dungeon moments. We would love it if a helicopter moment would come in where this helicopter comes in and just takes us out of the crap, out of the dungeon. But in reality, probably what we absolutely need is people that are our anchors, that let us know that they're here for us regardless of the situation, that win or lose or whatever the result is, they're there for us. And so I believe that that is best coming from the teammates specifically. And so that's kind of the way I look at it. The training comes in and helping the kids with the time ahead to know each other on a deeper level, to what can be said or not be said to each other when we're in those moments.
Lucas, I have a side question. When you were talking about it, basically checking in with the player, asking them how they're doing, how they're feeling, it reminded me, I feel like this comes up a lot. I've heard it with coaches and players kind of complaining about it. I'm sure the answer is like build a good relationship and be sincere, but I've heard coaches trying to do this stuff where they ask their player like, oh, like, how's it going? How are you feeling? And the kid is just, you know, maybe a teenager, just, I'm fine. Why is he trying to psychoanalyze me? Like a little more unresponsive and not as open. Have you ever faced that or been able to tackle that where a kid just wants to, I guess, not get in deep with their feelings with you?
He just does the Cam Newton move. What was the name of that move?
Dabs.
Yeah, he just dab on, right? Yeah, and all, everything's figured out. and that's totally like just a great kind of point of when you know your kids or your athletes, it's a matter of the fine word honestly scares the crap out of me. Anybody that's married knows that if you get the response of, hey, how was your day? I'm fine. It's going to be an interesting night from there on out. but when an athlete does that to me, it just says, hey, they're not at the state right now to be able to process anything. So then I go back to, for me, proximity, meaning do they need me to be by them or do they need the space to be able to process it? Do they? And so from there, I'm just thinking of the athletes I get to work with on almost a daily basis. It's very different from that. And so there's definitely amount of, when they go into that moment, there's a difference between a guest and a pest. And I guess I throw out when they're at that moment of the in the dungeon, the difference between a guest and a pest is an invitation. And I'll throw out a feeler. Of like, hey, my heart posture, my relationship with you, hopefully is that you trust me. It seems like you're in the dungeon. Is there anything you need from me? And if sometimes they'll actually share and go into it. And if they say no, then I give them their space.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because it seems like an unproductive conversation if you're trying to like force them to be open and they're just annoyed.
Yeah. Absolutely, because they're already in the dungeon state. And so the logical reasoning part of their brain is more than likely either in overdrive or it's not activated because of the emotional state they're in. And so it's almost a relief to our athletes when we create that space for that.
And then you've defined the dungeon moment pretty clearly and given us some examples. I guess, can you just kind of take us through what the penthouse feels like and what maybe that ideal state should be like when we're at our best playing in a match or I guess showing up?
Yeah, no. And thanks for clarifying that because it's not like the penthouse to me and the way that we define it is not when you've won the championship and feel like you could go conquer the world. Mm-hmm. I would actually argue that we're a little bit more in clutter. And so, to me, the penthouse is about calm, that mentally we have a level of focus where things are in flow. And so that is how I define it. And I do think that we can influence where we are at. When I see myself spending more time in the dungeon or anybody else around me, the first three things that I'm looking at are sleep. What are we sleeping? How are we sleeping? Stress, and then also the surroundings. So surroundings mean the people we're around, the environment that we're in. However, even when I've optimized all those things, I've still experienced the dungeon moments. And so the penthouse moment is just when things are light, they make sense, and there's a level of calm. And so have you had one of those moments for either one of you when you've been playing lately where it was just, things were just flowing?
Yeah, I would say so.
How would you describe it when you're playing, John?
I think what you're saying, yeah, that you're, I think it's just that you're just playing.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's not as much, questioning and doubt, and it's just, yeah, I guess you're a lot more present, and yeah, you just get, yeah, you're just competing.
Yeah. You're just competing. And that's, and so even when you screw up in those penthouse moments, it's just easier to, you know, your next play speed is it comes easier. And so that's how I define that elusive penthouse feeling.
And what role does self-talk play in both the dungeon and the penthouse moments?
You know, it, for me, self-talk is just a very, it's an interesting part because it always, when I look at the people, for me, especially before getting into this work, when I got into the dungeon, that's where I went more internal. And so I would analyze my team. I would analyze where I was among other people. I would really go more introverted when I went into the dungeon. Then when I was in the penthouse, I was more free-flowing and life was happening. And so self-talk is kind of that internal fuel of that navigation through those. And so what I think is crazy is just how much of a jerk all of us can be to ourselves, and yet how considerate and helpful we can be to others. And so, you know, love your neighbor like yourself, I think is a really, it's an interesting term because so many people believe in it, but I can definitely see from the internal turmoil why so many of us hate our neighbors is because if we're loving our neighbor like ourselves, internally we kind of use ourselves as punching bags. And so the way that I look at self-talk is, again, going back to the feelings as a compass. And so with where I want to get the athletes that I really train is, are these thoughts coming out of a fear state, which is the dungeon, out of a scarcity moment of, you know, am I going to be good enough? Am I going to make it? All of those things. Or is this self-talk coming out of truth or out of clarity? And so if it's in the dungeon moment, to me, that's a fear-based where our self-talk's coming from. And I've learned to let it go. And that's why I want to just train our athletes to is don't do what is default, which is go introverted in the dungeon, but rather just let it process, let it go. And so the self-talk comes to, you know, how are we with each other and practicing calm conversations? And so have you guys read Steve Magnus's stuff?
No.
So he's fantastic. He's I'm into distance running, and he's probably the best distance running coach, one of them in America right now. And he's out of Houston, and he wrote a book called Peak Performance. It's fantastic. And he works really hard with his athletes on, and he coined it calm conversations of just, okay, as I hear these thoughts of self-doubt, this talk, if I just listen to myself, it might be total self-berating. But at some point, I have to just talk to myself instead of listen. And that's where it's kind of learning to have calm conversations in those moments of in the moments of tension, which is interesting too, because when you think about what precedes some of the greatest moments of your life, the moments that you remember the most are self-doubt, are thoughts that most people would call negative thoughts or fear-based thoughts. And instead of viewing them as there's something wrong with me, because of, you know, what we know is that, well, the lizard's fired up, this part of your brain that doesn't want you to be exposed is telling you to get the hell out. Like, don't take the risk. That instead, those thoughts, those gremlins of, I don't belong here, I'm not ready, I'm too whatever, I'm not blank enough, those are just signals that we're on the right track. And so for self-talk, for me, it's understanding what does it mean? Instead of like, you know, I'm not a huge, huge believer in positive talk and all this excess extra stuff, but I am a believer in understanding the root of where our thoughts and self-talk come from and then practicing just calm conversations.
I like that. So I wanted to shift gears and get into some of your core principles. Would you mind first telling us what they are?
Sure. I mean, when you look at core principles, to me, it's the idea of like the idea of like a plane. If a plane takes off from New York, headed to the West Coast, and is just off 1 degree, it's going to miss its final target by many, many miles. And all a pilot does is just continually re-nudge and rebring that plane back on course. And so for me, my principles serve as things that I full-heartedly believe in through the dungeon moments. And so they're my anchor points that I have of, all right, when I get off track, here's what nudges me back. So some of my principles are there. And my partner trained to be clutch, Jamie Gilbert, it's Joshua Medcalf, Jamie Gilbert, and myself, he wrote an entire book called The Principle Circle, which is about just defining what are the things that keep me in line. And so I have a few of them that I really like, but my top one is your value comes from who you are, not from what you do. Another one is the hardest. Sometimes we have to let go of the easy yes to the good things in order we have to say no to the good things in order to be able to say yes to the great things. And a third one is in order to if we're going to commit to being great, we have to be able to work through the fear of being different.
I like those. So the one that I really jumps out at me is your value comes from who you are and not what you do. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, especially in sports, you know, athletes and coaches, see it the other way around. Mm-hmm. So why do you think it's this way? Why is it more about, especially in sport, like, isn't it about the result? And
yeah,
winning?
I mean, I feel like those are hard words even out of your mouth, John. you like choked them out.
I tried.
But to me, this came again when I started teaching the growth and the fixed mindset of how would you guys describe people in the fixed mindset that you see, you know, that avoid risk, that are just that live in that mindset? What words would you guys use to describe them as characteristics, kind of?
Protective. Fearful, I guess. Just think of someone not putting their neck out there, kind of playing it safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And Billy, how does that sound for you?
Yeah, it's right on.
And so when I look at like the root of the growth and the fixed mindset, it's out of fear. It's scarcity. It's defensive. It's all those words. And, you know, we could flip them then for the growth mindset is if I'm learning and growing, it's out of trust. It's out of knowing that regardless of what I do, regardless of my result, that I'm anchored, that I'm valued, and that I matter. And so when we go into the dungeon, it's interesting because I've heard a lot of things. I'll ask people, like, how do you know you're going to be all right? And it might be things like, you know, I'm going to be all right because I've got a lot of money. You know, I'm going to be all right because I have a really supportive family. I'm going to be all right. And all these things that come up that can be taken away from you in a heartbeat. And so when I look at that value statement, for me, it has to do with faith. For other people, it can just be a really strong belief in what it means to be human, to be a person, that you infinitely matter regardless of what you can add to a score. And what's crazy is just the freeing effect of when we shift that role, that our value comes from just being us. It puts kind of a dagger right through things like perfectionism. It puts a dagger through things of fear. And so I spend a lot of time working with people in one-on-one settings at the highest level down to the lowest about where do you derive your personal worth. And if it's on something that can be taken away from you in a heartbeat, then a lot of times we're somebody when we're winning, and then we're a nobody when we're not. And so really pulling the reins back and being very intentional about where do I get my personal worth from, I believe is the fuel power that then can keep us in the green of the growth mindset.
So what if we, is it okay to still like celebrate, you know, when they're doing well and be bummed when, like, especially as a coach, you know, how do we avoid this trap? Cause I feel like, yeah, if we're playing poorly, we're a little more disappointed, and we're playing well, so we're kind of setting them up to go that route. Like, oh, well, he or she only cares, you know, about me when I'm performing at a high level.
Well, and that's the thing is, I think when we experience is, do you only care about your kids when they're performing at a high level? And I mean, yeah, some, but maybe some coaches would say that. But to me, the dungeon moments are those moments where you have a brief opportunity as a coach to make a lifelong impact. And when you think back to the coaches that you still respect to this day, a lot of times it was because of the actions and the person that they were in the dungeon. And so with that being said, it's, I believe that we can experience the ray of emotion going all in with kids and athletes, and being happy when we succeed and being fully vulnerable of hurt when we fail. But they still know regardless that you love them. And, you know, it's at the end of the year when you tell them that, or that you really care about them, or that it was more about the team, and they look back at you and say, I know, where it was like, okay, they did get it. And so to me, it's just a very separate playing field and a feel within a group when they know you care more about them as a person than as an athlete. Doesn't mean you don't want them to experience success, both for themselves and you personally. But in the end, their value is bigger than how well they can hit a round ball around.
So how do you do this as a coach? How do you show that you care more about them as a person? Like, what are the moments you can do that in?
Yeah, for me, it's listening. Just by practicing that skill of listening to your group, you're giving them just an incredible benefit. You're showing them that so many of the belonging cues are tied in with listening of, and when I say listening, I view it kind of as three levels. Level one is just distracted listening, which we suck at with phones and everything else. Level two is when we flip everything to just what we're going to say, and how we turn it into, you know, more hijacking the conversation, using I, using me. And then level three is really about being present with that person and drawing out what they don't even know is within them. And so as a coach, what that means to me is time. Like, that takes time and is very – it's difficult, especially when you have so many things going on that could be using your time. And so listening to them and knowing them at a deeper level than, you know, just volleyball or their sport, and knowing about their family, knowing about their triggers, their what stresses them out, you know, and things along that nature is where I believe that comes from.
So should John's van ride home after a game – sound different or feel different after a win versus a loss?
I mean, I think it's just the natural way of accepting that, hey, feeling is an uncontrollable factor, and you're going to naturally get all the great things that go along with getting an accomplishment. So the way it feels is absolutely not. Like, I think it'd be crazy to, hey, we're going to be silent on the ride home and the way here no matter what, or after a tough loss, like, we need to get jacked up and let it roll. But I think there can be an underlying principle of love in either one of those situations.
So we can still stop for In-N-Out, even if we lost.
Hey, if that's how you guys celebrate, you know, a little In-N-Out roll.
They don't have In-N-Out in Green Bay, Billy.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
We are starting to get Chick-fil-A, so.
That's not the same.
Lucas, thanks for coming on. Can you tell us a little bit more? I guess we never really plugged Train to Be Clutch. What is it? What are you guys up to?
Yeah, so Train to Be Clutch, we're just it's interesting to put a finger on exactly what we do, but I like to call what we're working for is just helping people find freedom from the mental side of things to navigate the dungeon and the penthouse moments alike. And so, what we're up to is a wide variety of things, from doing workshops with amazing teams like John's. And, one thing I didn't bring up was just the way that I can get a really good vibe on a team is when I get to go work there and leave feeling and like kind of coming up with my mind of like, you know what, it won't be so bad to live here. Huh, I wonder if my wife Katie would be interested in potentially moving out here. Like, I bet
Let's
I could probably
work
something out, you know, to that. But like, it doesn't happen often. But when I went to LMU, that was, you know, the type of feel. And when that feel just tells me there's something about this group. And so I get to, you know, at Train to Be Clutch, see 60 to 70 different groups. And so what we're doing is doing workshops, doing one-on-one mentoring, things like that to help people continue to grow.
And on the flip side, can you tell us from your visit to LMU all the things John was doing wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Let me
bring up my document that I didn't get here. it was just a really cool visit to I think a lot of times what happens with coaches is you get on your island of excellence. And as coaches, we're always looking at where can we grow? Where can we grow? And the awesome thing that I get to see is just bring and is how far ahead some programs are than others. And, so I know that there's something that John would be quick to say that they're really working on. But when it comes to this stuff and in my field of high performance, a lot of good things are going on there.
Well, thanks, Lucas. And we'll find you a house here by the beach and get you to be with us more often. So talk to your wife.
that might not be an argument. So,
well, I was saying before the show, we've got to work with a lot of great people who work with the mental side of the game at LMU, and our girls really loved working with you, and we're looking forward to continuing to work with you, and I've learned a ton. So I'm glad that more people can hear this and learn from you. And I think you just do a great job of communicating and making, you know, these moments like the dungeon moments more understandable. And I think it's going to help a lot of athletes and coaches. So thanks for all your work.
I really appreciate you guys creating the environment so that I can do my work and what sets my soul on fire. So thank you guys for doing this and putting this resource out there for everybody. And I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Coach Your Brains Out. You can follow us on Twitter at Coach Your Brain or on Facebook, facebook.com/Coach Your Brains Out. If you like the show, please write us a review and spread the word.